Okay, ladies, we'll begin our class. I want to commend you all, like the mailmen. Like the mailmen, that you come out in the snow and all weather, and you bear the elements in order to come hear some words of Torah. You know my opinion that Thursday is a hectic day anyway, as it is, and compounded with the inclement weather of the snow outside. So you get bonus, you get extra credit. We're studying Perashat Mikitz. Let's just try to get the backdrop of this Perasha, what's happening. We read at the end of last week's Perasha that Yosef was thrown into jail. He was thrown into jail because the wife of Potiphar was his boss. His boss's wife suspected or actually convicted Yosef for committing some impropriety. And even though Yosef was innocent, there's no question about it, but Potiphar had to believe his wife to save face with his family, and he threw Yosef in prison. And then we read how in prison with him was the baker and the butler. And they had dreams. And Yosef saw them one morning despondent. He saw them, they were depressed. So he went up to them and asked them that famous question, why are you so depressed today? And from that question led to them opening up to Yosef the dreams. So Yosef said, yeah, I can explain you the dreams. So he tells the baker that, you know, you put rocks in the bread, you're responsible, and therefore Paro's going to kill you for that. In 3 days, Paro's going to execute you. And sure enough, in 3 days, Paro did execute the baker. But he tells the butler differently. He tells the butler, the Sar HaMashkim, in 3 days, Paro is going to reinstate you. He's going to call you out of jail. He's going to give you your job back, and you're going to serve wine to the king like you used to do. And then he tells him one more line. And he tells him, Ki im zechartani, which means, on the condition that you'll remember me. Which means, when you go to Paro now, do me a favor, remind the king that I'm in jail, and that I'm a good guy, and that I did you a favor. Maybe if you put a good word to the king about what's going on with me in prison, maybe the king will take me out. Now the rabbis say Yosef was punished for this. Yosef, as a result of trying to engage the help of the butler, which he shouldn't have, he should have trusted in God. They look at this as an act of desperation. When you're trusting a goy, Egyptian, anti-Semite, do you think that he's going to be able to help you out? Do you think he's going to put a good word in for you? So therefore, the rabbis tell us it was an act of desperation on Yosef's part, and therefore he was punished by having to stay in prison an extra 2 years. That's a very heavy, heavy punishment. But it tells us the greatness of Yosef. Yosef, since he had so much faith in God and so much belief in God, any sway from total belief in God, even engaging somebody else to help him, is looked like as a great sin. If we were to do that, it would be a mitzvah. If we were to ask somebody to help us because we're in jail, God wouldn't look at it as a bad thing. But since Yosef was so dependent on God, for him to ask the butler for a favor looks like he's panicking and like, I gotta get out of here, you gotta help me out. But there's another explanation. There's a story that's told when Napoleon, the famous conqueror, Napoleon Bonaparte, when he conquered Eastern Europe, when he came into Eastern Europe and he conquered, so they made a big party for him, and all the different speakers and clerics of every religion came in order to offer the blessings to Napoleon. And after all the speeches, Napoleon said, what, there's no rabbi here? There's no representative of the Jewish people? So they said, yeah, well, wait, we didn't know you liked the Jews. So they ran to a little shul. They found an old rabbi. Please, Napoleon wants to hear a speech from a rabbi. So I'm going to speak in front of Napoleon. I'm not a speaker. He comes in front of Napoleon. He says, my dear emperor, my dear king, I'm not eloquent like the speakers that obviously spoke before me. I only know how to speak the Bible, you know, words of Torah, so you'll forgive me. So Napoleon stands up and says, on the contrary, I'm tired of hearing all the praises about me. I'm tired of hearing all this false flattery. Let me finally hear something of substance. Let me hear something from the Bible. So the rabbi gets up and he says, Old Testament? He says, yes, we read the Old Testament. Story of Yosef in the jail. And he tells the butler, you're going to be saved. And right after he tells the butler, in 3 days you're going to be saved, he says, Ki im zechartani, in order that you will remember me in front of Paro. So he asks a question. What do you mean, you're going to be saved in order to remember me? What's one thing have to do with the other? As if he's saying that the reason why you're going to be saved is in order that you remember me? What's the connection? So he explained. He said, the way things work in the world, you have to try to analyze what the cause is and what the effect is. Many times when you read a story, you think you understand why the story happened, but if you analyze it good, you realize that, no, that was only the effect. The cause was something else. In this story over here, Yosef was telling the butler, you don't deserve to be saved. After all, there was a fly in the cup of the king. You're guilty. Your job is to make sure the cup is clean. And he imprisoned you already. Why should Paro change his mind and reinstate you as the butler? You know what that is? That must mean that something's in it for me. That God's reinstating you, not for you. He's reinstating you to put you in the right spot in order that you'll mention me in front of the king. So therefore, I'm the cause over here. You're the effect. You're only a result because God wants to take me out of jail. So therefore, he's letting you go out to do my bidding. So therefore, he tells him, Ki im zechartani. It's an order that you do me this favor. You have it all wrong. And then he turned to Napoleon and he said, why did you come to Eastern Europe? What do you need this for? Eastern Europe is not like Western Europe. It's beautiful. It's pretty. This is a wasteland, poverty-stricken, bad economy. What possessed you, Napoleon, a smart man, to come and conquer Eastern Europe? Must be that the Jews are the cause and you're the effect, which means the Jews in Eastern Europe are suffering. Our plight is very, very bleak. If God put it in your mind to come to Eastern Europe, must be it's for our sake, in order to redeem us, in order to help us, in order to alleviate our problems. Just like Yosef was telling the butler, you're being saved on my account. He told Napoleon, you're liberating Eastern Europe on our account. Napoleon liked the Hadush. He said, good. And it was known that Napoleon was good to the Jewish people. In any event, we see the same concept in the beginning of this week's Perashah. It says, Vahimiketz Shiratayim, and it was 2 years later, Ufaro Cholem, and Faro was having a dream. Now he has a dream. The seven fat cows, the seven lean cows, and the seven lean cows swallow the seven fat cows. You know the dream. But if you look at the Pasuk, it's strange in grammar. It says, Ufaro Cholem. Cholem is in the present tense. Paro is dreaming. It should really say, and Paro, Halam, he dreamt. I mean, this is the story you're telling me. So you're telling me the past. It should say, Ufaro Halam. What does it mean, and Paro is dreaming? And the explanation is, again, if we were secular people, how would we look at the story? We'd say, Yosef was in jail. Paro had a dream. And now he needed a dream interpreter. So he said, oh, let's look in the prison system. We have anybody that can interpret dreams? And then the butler says, oh yeah, I remember there's a guy in jail. He interpreted my dream. He's a great guy. So therefore, as a result of Paro's dream, Yosef ends up coming out. That's the way you look at it from a secular standpoint. And you want to take it a step further, you'd say, and if Paro never has this dream, or if he forgets his dream, like most people forget their dreams when they wake up in the morning, then Yosef doesn't come out of jail. It's Paro that precipitates Yosef coming out. So that means Paro is the cause, and the effect is Yosef. But now that you put on the glasses of the Torah, you come and see the opposite. It's not so. God had decided that Yosef must come out of jail. finished. His sentence is up. So now that we have to get Yosef out of jail, so God will create a scenario in the world to get Yosef out of jail. It's not Paro's dreaming first and then Yosef's come out. It's Yosef has to come out. Now that Yosef has to come out, he's the cause. So what's the effect? So Paro dreams, as if the Pasuk is saying, Vahimi ketch not time, Yemimu was after 2 years, after the elonged sentence of Yosef, where they added 2 years to his sentence, now it was time for Yosef to leave. Ufaro cholem, so as if God's telling Paro, dream. As if it's like a play. Now it's Paro's time to dream. If it would have said he dreamt, it would have implied that it was just happened to be that he had a dream, and as a result of the dream, luckily for Yosef, he got saved. Don't stop saying that. After 2 years, when Yosef's time came, God as if tells Paro, Cholem. He's telling him, dream, which means now's your time to dream, because I have to help Yosef. So it's backwards. Everything always happens in the world with cause and effect. But you have to put the glasses of Torah on to know who it's really happening for. I'll give you an example, and you apply this in history. You remember there was a premier, the leader of Russia called Gorbachev. Gorbachev was living at a time in history where the economy of the Soviet Union was faltering, and there was great problems. So he came up with a novel idea. In Russian they call it perestroika, which was an idea to try to build the economy and start to maybe get some investments from America and try to inject some maybe make a little more robust economy, like we said. Now, as a result of that, this perestroika went beyond Gorbachev's dreams. The Russians smelt the whiff of democracy, and all of a sudden, subsequently after that, the Russian wall came crumbling down. And as a result of that, hundreds of thousands of Jews, who until that point were unable to emigrate from Russia, they were locked in there like a prison, they were able to leave. So we look at it secularly, you look at it and say, well, look at that, if it wasn't for the faltering economy, if it wasn't for perestroika, if it wasn't for Gorbachev, so the Jews wouldn't be able to get out. Oh, look what happened. So no, the opposite. The way we look at it as God had a decree. Before Mashiach comes, the Jews of the world will have to all gather to Israel. That's written in the books. So God has decreed that there's a certain time how long the Jews are going to have to be in Russia. Like Yosef in jail. After that time, finished, it's over, they're supposed to get free. So once that time for the Jews in Russia to get free was up, so what does God do? He brings Gorbachev, he brings Perestroika, he brings the Maghreb. Gorbachev wasn't the cause. The cause was the Jews. They came first. It's like the famous question, which came first, the chicken or the egg? So you have to know, the chicken or the egg. Here, it's the Jews that came first. They had to be freed from Russia. So God then brings these effects after Gorbachev and the economy, da da da, in order to bring a benefit to the Jewish people. The same thing happened in Syria in the 1970s when they let the Syrian Jews leave Aleppo, Damascus. It's the same story. It's not that, the government changed their mind. Assad had a good heart for one day, and therefore were able to leave. It wasn't like that. God had decided that the Jews are supposed to leave, therefore the Syrian government has a change of heart. It all starts by us. We're always the cause. The Jews are always the cause. And then it happens. That's why it says, Ufaro cholem. Faro is dreaming, which means as if to say it was his time to dream in the present. Why? Because God needed to do something for a Jew in jail. Now, you know the dream, 7 fat cows eating 7 lean cows. 7 lean cows, I'm sorry, eating the 7 fat cows. And after they ate the 7 fat cows, they didn't even gain any weight. This is a... Because put this into a diet, this would be a great idea. You eat as much as you want and you don't gain any weight. Now, this bothered Paro for some reason. Now, why did it bother him so much? And he's calling all his dream interpreters. What does it mean? What does it mean? It means nothing. It's a dream. Don't you have dreams every night? Every time you have a dream, right away you call a dream interpreter and you get crazy. What's going to happen? But oh, what are you getting so panic stricken about over here? It's a dream. Take it for what it's worth. So the interpretation is, because Paro was concerned, he knew, as in any country, there's always a minority of people that are against the government. You never have a country where 100% of the people, you know, are pro-government. Even in America, you have these crazy extremists that are anti-American, anti-government, burning the flag, the supremacists and all these type of people. They're a minority, thank God, but they have to be dealt with. So Paro always understood, we're the majority, they're the minority, there's nothing to worry about. And then he has a dream. And he sees that the seven lean cows, which he's understanding is the minority, they're the weak people, the weak force in the Egyptian world, is going to swallow up the fat cows, which he thinks is his government. So he thought that this was related to him. So if he panics, maybe my government is on the rocks. So it wasn't a regular dream. This dream affected his core. So therefore he calls all his dream interpreters. Now, it should be pointed out that while that wasn't the real interpretation of the dream, but we always read this parashah Hanukkah time. Always this parashah will fall out on Hanukkah. Why? What's the connection? Very good. Based on... I'll explain it to you, don't worry. Based on what we're saying now, it's very good. The story of Hanukkah is the story of a few Jews, the Hashmonai family, and maybe a couple other thousand that joined them, that overthrew the Greek Empire. Now that's an amazing feat. A small amount of people to overthrow. That's the exact story of the seven lean cows that were able to swallow the seven fat cows. So Paro's dream is actually like a little connection to the story of Hanukkah, that the weak were able to overpower the many. That's a connection. Paro has a second dream. His second dream is he sees stalks. And he sees stalks of corn, stalks of wheat, ears, they call it. And you had seven healthy ones, and you had seven thin ones. And the seven thin ones swallowed the seven healthy ones. The same story again, just in ears. Paro wakes up. And each one tries to give him an interpretation. He doesn't like the interpretations. Finally, Yosef comes out of prison. They bring him up. It says he took a shave. It says the day Yosef came out of jail was Rosh Hashanah, by the way. God judges everybody on Rosh Hashanah. That was the day he was supposed to come out. And Paro right away tells Yosef, I heard about you. I heard about you that you're a great dream interpreter. Now, I want you to pay attention to what Yosef answers. Think of it. He's just let out of jail. He's in the palace. He went from prison to palace in one day. He has a private meeting with the king. A normal person would want to maybe, you know, get on the good side of the king. You definitely don't want to make a bad impression, because all the king has to do is snap his fingers and you go back to jail. This is Yosef's opportunity to maybe, even if we'll use the word false flatter a little, you know, to talk nice about him, give him compliments, you know, unbelievable, great work, what a country, beautiful, you know, you want to make an impression on him. You definitely don't want to upset the king, that's for sure. What does Yosef answer the king when the king says, I heard you interpret dreams? The first word that comes out of his mouth is Bil'adai, which means you're wrong. It's not me. I don't interpret dreams. God interprets dreams. Now that takes a lot of courage. That takes a lot of guts. In Hebrew we call it bitachon. It takes a lot of faith. A man of conviction. So you have to answer that, Yosef. Just say thank you very much. Okay, I appreciate it. Accept the compliment and next. But Yosef is so humble. Chas v'shalom. I interpret dreams. I'm nothing. I'm zero. What do I interpret? After all, it is God that interprets the dreams. Now, there's an interesting concept to be pointed out here. In Paro's dream, the Pasuk says he dreamt that he was standing over the Nile River. V'hine omed al hayor. He's standing on the Nile. Now, why would he dream that? You ever hear the statement that they tell you, you usually dream of something you're thinking about during the day? You know that we believe in that, by the way. Something you think about during the day, it usually come out somehow at night in the subconscious. That's why they tell you a lot of times the Gemara talks about bad dreams that you have to be concerned about. My God forbid, the teeth falling out and things like that. Don't get scared if you had a dream like that, by the way. But the Gemara says, but you know, if you went to the dentist that week, so then you don't have to worry about such a dream because it's on your mind. Or you have a dentist appointment, so you're thinking about your teeth all day long, so you dreamt about your teeth. So if anything was able to cause you to dream about it, so forget about it. That dream is worthless, isn't it? So Paro dreams that he's standing on the Nile. What was he thinking about during the day to dream such a crazy dream? Now, do you know, in Egypt, the Nile was considered a god. They worshipped the Nile. Because the Nile River used to overflow a couple of times a year and would irrigate the whole country. So you were at the whims of the Nile. If the Nile overflows, so you have beracha that year. If it doesn't overflow, so you starve. So they would pray to the Nile. Paro's dreaming that where is he standing? Over the Nile. From here, the rabbis learned Paro must be thinking in his mind that while the Nile is the god, I'm even higher than the Nile. I'm a god controlling the Nile. Hence, Paro dreams what he thinks of during the day, standing on the Nile, to show you the arrogance, to show you the conceit of such a man. Let us compare this to Yaakov Avinu. When Yaakov Avinu has a dream, it says, "V'hine Hashem nitzav alav." Behold, God was standing over Yaakov. What is Yaakov thinking about during the day? That God is on top of him and he's on the bottom. Now, when Paro tells the dream over to Yosef, he doesn't tell him that he was standing on the Nile. He tells him, "I was standing on the side of the Nile." He changes. Why would he change? Tell him the dream. What was the dream? What are you concealing over here? He said, "Am." When he's telling the story, he says, "V'hinini omed al sfat tayor." I was standing on the side. So some of the rabbis learned that he was testing him. He wanted to see not only if he can interpret the dream, but if he knows the dream. So some rabbis say, "Yosef, hey, don't sketch. You aren't on sfat. You are on the Nile." So, okay, you're good. You know, he's able to even catch the inconsistency in the dream itself. So he was trying to trick him. But based on what we're saying, we have a sharper answer. When Yosef answered Paro with such humility, it's not I that answer dreams, it's God. A normal person would relish at that. "Oh, of course, what do you mean? I'm expert, this is my expertise. I called it. You know, I was the guy that told the butler he's going to get his job back. And was I right or wrong? I was the guy that said that the baker's going to get his head chopped off. Was I right or wrong? Of course." You know, you enjoy the compliment. Yosef says, "God forbid, don't give me any credit." He deflects the honor immediately. "It's God. I'm nothing. I'm just a receptacle that receives the wisdom from God, and I'm relating the message to you." When Paro heard that humility, Paro got ashamed. Paro said, "Look at the difference between this man and look at me. I'm dreaming that I'm on top of the Nile. I'm in control of my God. I'm the most conceited animal in the world, and I'm being confronted here by a Jew. A simple Jew, especially the way Paro looks at the Jew, and nothing. And look what a humility. Look what a humble." So Paro was embarrassed. So Paro tells Yosef, "In my dream, I was standing on the side of the river." No longer can he say, "I'm on top of the river." It was Yosef humbled him. And from here you learn a great lesson. The greatest way to teach people anything in life is not preaching to them. Preaching is probably the worst way to teach people how to do things, by the way. The best way to teach people is by example. You know, instead of Yosef coming straight out and telling Paro, "Oh, you arrogant, standing on the water, you don't think you're better than your God." Don't tell him anything. Just be an example of humility. Just by him saying, "I'm nothing, I'm not worthy, the compliment belongs to God," it automatically affected Paro, who is such a stubborn Rasha. He had no choice but to understand and learn the message that Yosef was saying. And he became humble at least for 5 seconds in his life as a result of the good behavior of Yosef. You want to make people better? Let them just see your behavior. Let them see the way you talk. Let them see you conduct yourselves. You don't have to open your mouth. The same thing would apply to raising children. If you want to teach your children lessons, the best thing is through example, like we said many times. Let them see your priorities. Let them see what's important to you. And automatically, they will come to the priorities of a parent. Torah then says, now Paro has the dream twice. So Yosef says, the fact that you dreamt it twice, meaning with cows, and then you dreamt it with storks, so that means it's going to happen very fast. Which means this is not going to happen in 100 years from now. It's happening imminent. It's happening immediately. This 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine, which was the prediction, is going to happen immediately. That's why you dreamt it twice. And then Yosef gives Paro advice. He tells him, my advice to you is you should appoint an administrator over Egypt and let him manage the land, so to speak. You know, during the 7 years of plenty, he has to put the stuff in warehouses to save it, because when the 7 years of famine come, you're not going to have any food. So you need somebody that has a little wisdom to know how to manage the plenty years so the food will be remaining for the years of famine. That's Yosef's advice. So the question they all ask is, who asked Yosef for his advice? I mean, we called you from the prison because you're a dream interpreter. Okay, you gave me the interpretation. 7 years famine, 7 years this. Now I became an advisor now. I became now a cabinet member. And therefore I'm going to tell you, do this. Hire this guy. Bring this guy. Hey, oh. Yeah. He should have told him, Hazak Baruch, scale him, it's born, see you later. Where does Yosef have the audacity to start advising the king? Now, it's one thing if the king would have asked him, listen, do you have any good ideas? That's another story. But it doesn't say he did that. So the interpretation is like this. If you look at the dream, the way Paro relates the dream, he says like this. I had the dream of the cows. Then I got up. And then I had a second dream. The second dream is with the storks. Now, why did the dream happened like that, where he got up in the middle? Why couldn't it just been one long dream? And Paro makes a point to tell him that. And the first dream, I got up, Vayikatz, I awoke, and then I went back to sleep and had a second dream. So Yosef understood from that if God gave him the dream like that, that's part of the interpretation. So that means something. That needs an interpretation. That means Paro, after you see the 7 lean cows swallowing the 7 fat cows, Paro, wake up. It's as if God is telling you got to do something about it. Don't just sit back, Paro, and watch your country go to pot. Don't think that this is out of your control to handle. If the fact that you woke up, that's God telling you, wake up, do something, don't sit back. So therefore, Yosef says, if you woke up in the dream, that's my cue to tell you, do this, hire that guy, change that. So that was part of the interpretation. It wasn't unsolicited advice. He's telling you, that's what the sign of God wants from you. Now, let's move on. It says in Pasuk, Yosef has 2 sons in Egypt. The 2 sons are Menashe and Ephraim. Now, the Torah tells us why he called his second son Ephraim. I'm going to go with the easy one first. He says, Ki Ephrani Elohim be'eres onyi. The way they explained that is, God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. That's a nice name, Ephraim. It's like from Peru Urvu, to be fruitful. which means Yosef is saying, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm in the foreign land over here, and I'm the king. I'm sitting on the throne over here. I'm the most powerful man in the world. So, God, thank you for giving me such a fruitful beracha. So he names his second son Ephraim. I have no problem with that name. I understand it. It's befitting. It's the first name that bothered me. Menashe. Where does Menashe come from? So he says, Ki nashani Elohim et kol amali, because God has made me forget all my hardship. Menashe in English would be interpreted to forget. Menashe is to forget. So what is he saying he forgot? I forgot all my hardship. I don't have a problem with that. That's a good thing. You know, he went through a lot of stories till he became the king. He was thrown into jail in Egypt. He was sold by his brothers. There's a lot of things that Yosef wants to, you know, move on. He doesn't want to be bogged down by that. Thank you, God, for making me forget. But then he says, Ve'et kol bet avi, and thanking you for making me forget my father's household. Father's household? You're thankful for forgetting your father's household? Is that a complimentary thing to forget? Who wants to forget your father? Your father's Yaakov Abinu. Your father's the biggest tzaddik in the world. You never want to forget that. And Yosef is proud, and he even names his child Menashe. I have to thank Borei Olam for forgetting my father's house. So I saw a fantastic explanation like this. There's a famous question that's asked. I don't think we discussed it. Why didn't Yosef send a message to his father, Yaakov, to tell him that he was alive? It's a strong question. I mean, Yaakov Chazit is suffering for 22 years thinking that Yosef is dead. So Yosef, you're the king of Egypt. To send a fax, send a telegram, send it with a messenger. Yaakov, I'm alive, I'm okay, don't worry about it. Didn't he think of that? What about your poor father? He's undoubtedly he's suffering. You know what you meant to your father. Send him a letter. What does it cost you? So the rabbis explain like this. This is a deep concept. That dream that Yosef had, remember, with the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to him, that was a dream that he had last week's parasha. I'll review the dream quickly. He dreamt. He saw the sun, the moon, and stars bowing down to him. What does that mean? The sun is referring to his father, and the stars, there was 11 stars in his dream, that's referring to his brothers. That there's going to come a time where his father and his brothers are going to bow to him. That was the dream he had. Now, this dream was not merely a dream, it was a prophecy. And it's a prophecy that, by the way, came true. If you remember when the brothers finally came down to Egypt with their father, Yosef was the king, it says they bowed in front of him. Now, since Yosef knew that that dream was a prophecy, Yosef had to see to it that that prophecy will come true. You're not allowed to interfere with a prophecy. Now, if Yosef tells his father that he's the king, so the cat's out of the bag now. So now, when the brothers come down to Egypt, they know it's Yosef, they're not bowing to him, they know it's their brother. So it changes the whole complexion of the story. So as difficult it is for Yosef not to tell his father, but he knows that he has no choice, because if the dream has to come true, so it's only going to come true if they don't know he's Yosef, including Yaakov. So they have to come down not knowing, and they'll bow to him thinking he's the king of Egypt. And why does God want this to happen? That's another story. But that's what the prophecy was. Now, where does Yosef get the strength? Would you be able to sleep at night knowing your father is suffering like that, and you're not able to tell him? It would eat you up. It would kill you. Where do you get the fortitude of character to hold this information back? From God. God gave Yosef a gift. What was that gift? He forgot. What did he forget? His father's household. Which means Not that he forgot Yaakov, chas v'shalom. God gave him the strength that he'll be able to withhold this information and it won't eat him up. It was one of these things where he had to do. Maybe he didn't want to do it, but he had to do it because the prophecy has to come true. So he says, thank you, God, for giving me the ability to forget my father's household in the sense that I'm able to carry on like a normal human being, even though I'm doing the seemingly the most cruelest thing that a son could do to the father, but it's one of those necessary evils that have to be done in order that the prophecy comes true and that I'm still able to carry on and live normal. Menasheh, thank you for giving me the strength to forget my father's household, that it won't eat me up so much that I have to go through this whole charade. The famine hits, and it hits the whole region, not only Egypt, but it hits Canaan. That's where Yaakov's family was. So the only place in the whole Middle East that had food was Egypt, because they were saving during the 7 years of plenty. So Yaakov Abin, who's living in Canaan, tells his sons, Lama titra'u, let's not be conspicuous. Go down to Egypt and get some food for the family. So the rabbis said, listen, don't be conspicuous. What is that word? Don't show yourselves. Lama titra'u. So the rabbis explained that what Yaakov was telling his sons and his family was, we're rich. And they were rich. We have food. There's really no reason for us to go down to Egypt. We have enough food over here to live very comfortably. The only problem is, we're living amongst all the goyim. And they're all going down to Egypt because they don't have food. If we don't go down with them, it's going to look very bad on our family, and the goyim are going to resent us, and they're going to hate us, and it could jeopardize our safety. So therefore we have to sketch. Even though we have food, don't give an image to the goyim that we're wealthy. Go down like them, like everybody else, stand online, wait for the money, because if you're going to stay home, it'll only incite jealousy amongst the neighbors. Ladies, from here we learn a very important lesson. The Torah is telling this to us. It's an important lesson about the nature of Jews and about the nature of our Gentile neighbors. It doesn't matter if you're living in Canaan, it doesn't matter if you're living in France, it doesn't matter if you're living in America. A Jew, when it comes to his materialism, when it comes to his wealth, he has to be very careful not to flaunt it. Because when the Jewish wealth is flaunted into the eyes of the Gentiles, they resent that. And the rabbis explain, because this is already a deep-seated hatred that they have from way back when Yaakov stole the blessings from Esav. So they feel already they got cheated. You know, they feel already we bamboozled them once, and now look, they're coming in our country. These are only guests. They're coming in our country and they're taking all the money. They feel like they're wrong, but they feel as if we stole it from them, even though we earned it honestly. But they feel like we're taking, it's their money. They have no right. Yaakov Avinu was concerned about what people are going to say. From here you see, even if a person has all the wealth in the world, he can't say, well, who cares what they say? Well, you have to be concerned. You're living on Earth. If you're living on Gilligan's Island, you don't have to worry what people say. No one's looking at you. But if you're living on Earth where there's other people who have eyes that are watching, there is a certain responsibility of a wealthy person how you have to manage yourself. Just because you have it doesn't mean you can flaunt it, you can show it off, and you can talk, and you can be ostentatious. Because forget about what it does to the Jews. That's a whole other class. I mean, what it does to the Jews is another story, but what it does to the goyim, when they see the flashiness and they see the arrogance of it and they see the openness of it, and it's too much for them to handle. And God forbid it causes causes them to hate us, and God forbid it causes them to want to damage, to want to steal from us, to want to hurt us. Yaakov Avinu tells his kids, fool them, make believe we're poor. Stand on line with a basket to get some bread. But daddy, we have much, we have bread for 10 years in the warehouse. Doesn't matter. Give an impression that you're poor like everybody else so they don't suspect you. The last thought we'll say on the Perasha, thought was a great Hiddush. It says, when they come to Egypt, so now Yosef tells them, you're spies. He starts to play games with them. When the brothers came down to Egypt to get the food, Yosef is the king. Yosef gives out the food. So the brothers, they don't know it's Yosef. They have no idea it's Yosef. They didn't recognize him, it says. So he recognized them. The rabbis say, why was that so? They say, because when he left, the brothers had beards already. But Yosef was young, he didn't have a beard yet. So his face took on a whole different look with the beard. So he was able to recognize them, but they didn't recognize him. So now, they're standing online like everybody else. 11 brothers, or 10 brothers, whatever it was. 9 brothers, actually. So, they turn to Yosef for food. Yosef says, oh, what's going on over here? You're all spies. We're spies, we're not spies, we just came to get food like everybody. No, you're spies, we're putting you in jail, what kind of people? He made a whole story about that. And he says, tell me about your family. He says, well, they say we have a brother at home, that's Binyamin, and there's another brother that's missing in action. They don't want to tell the whole story about Yosef, because they don't know it's Yosef. So Yosef says, okay, fine. We're putting you all in jail. And let one of you go home, bring back your younger brother. So the Pasuk says, after that, Yosef puts him in jail for 3 days. Then he says, Vayom Elim Yosef, Vayom Eshlishi, on the third day, he says, Zot Asu. He says, I changed my mind. I want you to do this, you and you'll live. Eta Elohim Ani Yareh. He says, first of all, I want you to know I'm a God-fearing person. I believe in God. Now, instead of keeping you all in jail, one of you stay in jail, and the other brothers go home and bring you. Why do I have to punish all of you? You all go home, just leave me one hostage. The Pasuk writes, Vayasuchin. And the brothers listened. It seems that the brothers gave over one hostage, and they went home. But then the next Pasuk writes that the brothers turned to each other, and they said, why is this happening to us? Why is God doing this to us? Why is God making us convicted as spies when we're not? Must be we did something wrong. Maybe the sale of Yosef is coming back to bite us. Maybe this is the punishment for what we did to our brother. They started to, reanalyze that whole story. Then the Pasuk writes, "Vaydaber alem vayikach mitam et Shimon." They gave Shimon, that was the brother that they gave as hostage, "Vayesur oto le'enehim." So the Rabbi Schwab asks the question. It says after they made some introspection, after they realized that maybe what they did to Yosef was wrong, then it says, they gave over Shimon. They say, you know what, take a hostage, we'll go home and bring the other brother back. So what does it mean when it says in the previous Pasuk, Vaya'asuchin, and they did it? They didn't do it until later. It sounds like they gave over the hostage over here by Yasuchim, but according to the Torah, they made Teshuvah first, they repented from what they did to Yosef, and then they gave him over. So what does this word by Yasuchim mean in the early Pasuk? So Rav Schwab says something brilliant. He says, Yosef came back to them after 3 days and said, I was thinking about it. It's not fair to put all of you in jail. After all, I believe in God. So therefore, you all can go home, just leave me one guy. What brought Yosef to that conclusion? It's because I believe in God. And people that believe in God constantly reanalyze their decisions. Constantly reanalyze and rethink if what they did was right or wrong. He says, so in the beginning I told you should all stay, but after thinking about it, I'm a God-fearing person. I was thinking about it better. Let one of you stay. So when the brothers saw that the fear of God brought Yosef to reanalyze a decision he made, Vaya'asuchen. They did the same thing, meaning what? They reanalyzed the sale of Yosef. And they said, Maybe we were wrong. Maybe we made a mistake. Maybe we were too cruel. Maybe we should have done it. It was the inspiration that they got from Yosef that he rethought a decision because of fear of God, that they said if he can do it, he's a nothing. He's an Egyptian. He's a goy. Certainly as Jews that we have fear of God, we might have to revisit that story of Yosef and reanalyze. And they did it. And after they did it and they realized that they might be wrong, then they gave over Shimon and they said, fine, keep the hostage and we'll go home and get Binyamin. So the Vayahar Sukhen is going back on the introspection that they made. Again, you see that trait of Yosef. Through his behavior, he inspires others. His humility in the beginning of the Perasha inspires Paro to say that I wasn't standing on the Nile anymore. I was standing next to the Nile. And now his behavior here with the brothers of saying, the fear of God brought me to change my opinion. He didn't give anybody rebuke. He's just acting like a normal Jew is supposed to act. The brothers said, wow, what a person, what a man, what a character. Vayasuchen, we want to be like this person. And therefore they reanalyze their whole story with the sale of Yosef. This is the subject of the Perasha. One last thought, just a side point, a note, just a note. At the end of the Perasha, there's a rabbi that usually tells us how many pesukim are in every Perasha. It's a nice fact. You want to know how many pesukim are in each Perasha, for whatever that does for you. There's a rabbi at the end, he tells you 142, 136. This is the only Perasha where the rabbi tells us not only how many pesukim are in the Perasha, but how many words are in the Perasha. And he tells us, in this Perasha, there's 2,025 words. So everybody says, yeah, why this Perasha? Was he concerned about the words? So he says that this Perasha always comes Hanukkah time. Now we know Hanukkah, we light candles. In Hebrew, a candle is called a ner. The numerical value of ner is 250. Nun is 50, there's just 200. Ner equals 250. There's 8 days of Hanukkah. So 250 times 8 is 2,000. And the holiday starts on the 25th day of the month of Kislev, which is 25. So he says, isn't it a coincidence? The holiday where we light 8 times Ner, 8 times 250, that starts on the 25th. So there's 2,025 words in the Perashah. So you see another connection between Miketz and Hanukkah. Okay, Shabbat Shalom.